Hello and welcome back to episode number three of the Tussock Talks podcast. Yeah, episode three. Wow, so it's kind of mad saying that.
I know, yeah,
But
it's tough.
we're here. Today, if you would have listened to last week's episode, you would have seen that I went into my story and kind of my background and how I kind of developed self-awareness and came out to the States. But this week is going to be another good one because we're going to talk about Kieran's story and how he kind of developed and his backstory and how he ended up out in the States and how he ended up on a Sheepy Little podcast with me. So, Kieran, welcome. How are we?
Cheers, bud. Yeah, no, I'm excited to get into this today. It's not often that I get however long, 45 minutes or an hour, just to talk about myself. That's one thing that I probably find a bit uncomfortable is talking about myself and my own story and stuff. But yeah, no, look, I'm excited. I learned a lot about you last week, and I think it was really valuable as well. So hopefully we can provide something similar this week, you know?
I'm sure. I mean, we might as well just get straight into it.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
In terms of your background, like obviously growing up, sport in Ireland is kind of it's important, and it's the one thing that a lot of young lads will get into from a very early age. So talk me through like primary school times, like or even starting to get into sport.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good place to start because I think kind of my whole nearly 22 years of existence has kind of revolved around sports so far, which I think has presented challenges in itself, but also has presented me with kind of the best things that I've experienced to date, you know. I played sports since as soon as I could walk. Both my parents met in my local tennis club. So I was kind of like brought up in my local tennis club. So I was straight away put a tennis racket into my hand. Despite not really having tennis as my main sport when I was a kid, it was always the Gaa and the hurling. So I played everything that I could. Didn't matter what it was for how long. Like my life just revolved around playing as much sport as possible. And I think that was, I mean, look. You and I know that we learn a lot of like valuable lessons from sport and stuff, but it really did give me something to hold on to as a kid, and I'm really grateful for that. I think sometimes that can go too far, whereas like we attach our identity to sports. But as a kid, it was nice that you're able to rock into primary school and you're able to rock into wherever and know that you had a mutual bond with other people around you because you played sports, you know? So I never really found it too hard to kind of socialize or make friends or stuff because naturally I was quite a quiet and introverted kid and very to myself. But because I had sports with me, it was just an easy in. So I'm quite grateful for the fact that I had sports. I don't know about you. You can tell me if you found that similar. But for me, anyway, I found that despite the fact that I was quite quiet as a kid and quite reserved, I always had kind of my set group of friends that I kind of naturally gravitated towards because of sports. So it was a real good pillar for me to have growing up because it was just something that I was able to kind of meet people and socialize through.
Yeah, it's crazy how much our life has, or how much sport has impacted our lives. And when you think about back in the, let's say, primary school days, it's like you're playing in the yard, you're like we were used to kick a tennis ball around, or like we used, I don't know, do rounders, and like it's just like people make a living, and we've come to America because of a ball, you know. And it's like it's amazing how much sport and just the game can bring you across the world. And like, yeah, I was the same. Like growing up, sport was everything to me, and knowing that I could meet people from all over the country just because of a ball, and just because we, like you said, we had a shared and mutual kind of interest, it's amazing. And I think it's again, like you said, I'm extremely grateful too that it has brought me across the world, and I've met so many amazing people, and it literally all started from just picking up the racket in your case, or picking up the ball, or picking up the hurl. And it's like you said, I'm so grateful for it. Then kind of in terms of like, obviously tennis is your main sport now. When was that period when you decided to kind of go full on into tennis, or was there that period, or are you telling
me? Yeah, no, there was. Like, there definitely was, because I think there's a time at which, if you're serious about a sport and you want to be serious about a sport, there's only so long that you can live the fairy tale dream of playing tennis, soccer, ga, hurling, golf, swimming. There's only so long that you can do that for. And I think at a certain time I had to make a choice of kind of one sport that I wanted to focus on. And maybe when I was a young teenager, I kind of saw people around me within the tennis kind of world that had gone to America and completed 4-year degrees out here on tennis scholarships. And at the time I was a shy tennis player growing up, like all the way through juniors. Like the people, see, I don't know what people's mindsets are, or if they have any knowledge or whatever, but anybody that knows anything about tennis, like relatively compared to a lot of people, I was shite at tennis growing up. Like I was fairly bottom of the barrel until nearly I went away because of other sports. So there's trade-offs, isn't there? Like life is about trade-offs. And then I think what I gave away in being good at, like being really good at one sport, I took value from like the friends that I made and the relationships that I got from all other sports. So although I wasn't a really, really, really good high level tennis player all the way up through juniors, I was quite a well-rounded athlete. And I also then made all my friends through all different sports. So that's one thing that as a result of that, it took me a while to then play catch up when I decided that tennis was for me. So I think I'd given up. So Gaelic and hurling were always my two main sports, and they were my main two sports until I was probably 15 or 16 in secondary school. And then I kind of decided that, okay, I want to get a little bit more serious at the tennis here and see what I can do with it. At that stage, I wasn't really thinking of going to America, but I just wanted to, like, I was just enjoying it more, because certain things changed with teams and stuff, and I probably wasn't enjoying the game, the hurling as much. I played for a couple of years with yourself, with the Dubs, and then that quickly ended. And then after that, I kind of maybe fell out of love a little bit, and maybe, I think, we'll get into this more as the podcast goes on, but I don't think I took a lot away from that experience playing with the Dubs. Like, okay, I played from, I don't know, whatever it was at the start, under 13 to under 16 with them. But I think for not one part of that, like not one minute of the time that I was with the Dubs did I ever believe that I should have been there. And it's only now that I look back at that I'm like, oh Jesus, okay. Like you were really dealing with some sort of like self-esteem stuff or something like that, or like self-belief in myself. And not for one minute in those 3 years did I ever feel as if I should be there. Every time we were training or every time we were playing a match, I was like, okay, this is the last time I'm here, because these lads are going to find me out now and they're going to realize, okay, he needs to be dropped or whatever. So I think it's interesting that, like, from the surface, or like I walk into secondary school or whatever and I'm like, oh yeah, I played a match for the Dubs on the weekend or whatever, people are like, oh, that's class. But actually I'm like, yeah, okay, it's cool on the surface, but deep down, for the whole weekend and for the 3 weeks before that, I was like, fuck, what happens if I embarrass myself? What happens if I drop the ball? What happens if I give away a free? Like all this sort of stuff, you know? So I think it's interesting. Although it looked good on the surface, I didn't enjoy it at all. And I think when I got dropped then from the Dubs, that was almost a confirming, it was like confirming a belief in myself that I wasn't good enough.
I see, yeah.
So then now looking back, I could have taken in one or two routes. I could have been like, okay, let's kind of drive on now and try and really hard to get back on the team, or let's try another avenue and let's try and go elsewhere. And that's probably where it started, the tennis journey started. So I gave up the football, and then I focused, was just hurling and tennis then. Even though I was a good enough footballer or whatever, I always preferred hurling. And then fifth year came around, start of fifth year, and that was the time where I decided that, like, I really wanted to give America a go. So I gave up.
Wow.
The hurling on my last... Huh?
It was that early. Like, I didn't really decide until like 6 year probably.
Yeah, so I decided, but I think I had to decide because your level comparatively to my level, like my tennis level compared to your football level was way less. I needed to play catch up. So in fourth year, it was kind of fourth year that I decided that I really wanted to go to America, and that's when I started like the training and really going serious about it. I then decided that I would play championship. I think it was minor. It must have been. It was my last year minor. Mm-hmm. I decided that I'd stick out the championship with the lads because that was one thing that was kind of instilled with me from my parents. Like that's kind of how I was raised. It was always like, okay, if you want to quit something or you want to give up something and it's a team sport, they'll always let me. If they're like, if you hate it, you hate it, you can give it up. But for you will always see it through until the end of that season because you're not going to let your team down a person. I'm not saying that I contributed massively to any team that I was on, but it was less that and more you're part of a team, so you don't drop out and you don't leave your brothers behind type thing. So anyway, fifth year championship rolled around. This is just at the start of fifth year, and we were playing Clontarf in a championship semi-final or something. I can't really remember if it was a semi-final, but I ended up breaking my leg. Breaking my leg. Got a hit across my shin, and broke my leg, and which was a bit of a mad one because like I was like, okay, this is the last kind of season that I'm ever going to play hurling, and just so happened on my last ever match because they ended up losing that match, I broke my leg. So that was a bit of a shoot in the foot, I guess, because I was kind of ready to kind of get going on the tennis. yeah, exactly. Excuse the pun. It was a tough one because I was ready to start like taking the tennis seriously. That was going to be my only sport. I was going to give it like 100%. And then I was out for about 6 months before I was match fit again. So I was in a cast for like 6 or 8 weeks, full leg cast. I still remember going into school with it. Like full massive red thing. I was on crutches. Oh my God, it was terrible. I was wearing shorts. I was wearing like just tennis shorts or whatever. And then I had my uniform jumper on. I don't know why I still wore my uniform jumper. I don't know for what reason I didn't just wear my own clothes. But anyway, I traipsed in on my crutches and stuff. And that was a tough time, but again, I use that as just an opportunity to try and get better off like on the tennis court and stuff. So it was kind of, I made a change, like a certain change to my forehand, which is, and I'm going to nerd out here now for the next 5 minutes. So if people have no interest in tennis, they can just skip forward 5 minutes. But I made a change to my forehand, like the way I held the tennis racket on my forehand. And so I wouldn't have really had the opportunity to do this if I wasn't injured, because it's very hard to like change a technique when you're like hitting and like when you're regularly training. So I wasn't able to train. So I was just like creating new muscle memory in my swing pattern. So I did that kind of every day for like 3 or 4 hours every day while I was on my crutches in my cast. And I did that for months on end until I was able to then get back. And I literally started with the like 5 and 6 year old tennis lesson groups in the tennis club. So I was still on my crutches, but I was like practicing because the younger kids use a different tennis ball. It's kind of, there's less air in it and it's a bigger tennis ball. So it gives you more time to react. So I know the coaches quite well in the tennis club. So I was like, here, can I come in and you feed me a few tennis balls that I can hit tennis balls with? So I was in the lessons with the 5 and 6 year olds. And then I'd stay for the older lessons, the 7 or 8 year olds. And I was doing that for hours on end. So like, that's kind of when the training got really serious. And then eventually I got back fit. And then I suppose COVID came around and stuff like that. But yeah, through that, I was able to just keep training. And it was, it was a grind. I sacrificed a lot towards the latter end of secondary school. I missed out on a lot of social activities that I would have potentially could have gone on with friends and stuff. And it got to the stage where when I was back fit in fifth and sixth year, I was like going to the gym 3 days a week before school. I was getting the bus back to school. I was coming home for lunch and then I was going back to school or whatever. And then coming home, training for like, I don't know, 2 or 3 hours. And then coming home, doing homework and then doing the same thing again. So it became a lifestyle. It became habit. It became just normal for me to do that. Because there was always a purpose there. There was always a goal that I wanted to achieve. It was thankfully it happened that I was able to sign and come over here for college. I think I signed in November of 6 years. So I kind of was able then to kind of take a step back off the Leaving Cert. The Leaving Cert wasn't too stressful for me, thankfully, because I didn't need specific points. I was still filling out the CAO or whatever, but yeah, I was able to kind of just take it easy a little bit. Obviously, COVID kind of helped with that. I only sat like 4 exams in the Leaving Cert, but yeah, look, I think it was a tough two and a bit years before I eventually got to America. And but I'm thankful for that 2 years. It was the hardest work that I mean before college it was the hardest I'd ever worked for kind of straight 2 years, but I'm grateful for it because it set me up really well for when I eventually got to America.
Yeah, just going back a little, it was interesting you spoke about, you know, your time with the Dubs, and then you spoke about, you know, when you started tennis and how you didn't feel like you were good enough, like there was kind of like some sort of self-doubt from the very, very beginning. Like, is that something that, or where did that come from, you know, why was it I'm not good enough here, like what was it from?
Good question. I've explored this quite a bit with a coach that I talked to. Like I talked to this guy from back home quite a bit, and I don't know what you'd call him, therapist, mentor, shrink, who knows. He's just a guy that I know from back home, and I know him very well, and I owe my life to him. But and he helped me through a lot kind of during that time as I was growing up as well. So I've explored this a lot, because I think if you can find that source of, like, I mean, I root it back to low self-esteem and like low self-worth as I was growing up. I don't know if I can really point it to one specific like trauma or time where I was like, okay, that's what sparked like low self-esteem within myself. But I can definitely point out areas in which, as I was growing up, areas in which I kind of can see now, I can look back now and be like, yeah, okay, that was your low, like that was low, that was your like no self-belief, no self-worth, like low self-esteem speaking out. And that was, I suppose that was always just a way, which is a weird one, because like it's something that I wouldn't have thought really would have appeared, because in primary school and secondary school, I was naturally pretty good at like a pretty well-rounded athlete. And I suppose in a certain sense, in primary school, it's definitely, you're, I don't know about you if you agree, but almost like status can come from how good an athlete you are. That's just 100%. the way I've experienced this. And thankfully, and I'm grateful for the fact that I was on the nicer end of that, because I was, as a kid, I was growing up, I was naturally a pretty decent athlete. So my status came from how good you were at sports and stuff sometimes. So it's interesting, because I was naturally kind of a good athlete, that I found primary school and secondary school quite easy. However, then that didn't align with, it didn't align with kind of then my self-esteem and self-worth as I was growing up, because then when I kept pushing the boundaries and going to, as I was getting better and better, my self-belief just kind of came less and less and less, which is an interesting kind of position to look at, because it's I kind of, the way I see it is imposter syndrome. Kind of when you're in a room, you don't believe as if you should be there, and you don't believe you're good enough to be there. So every time that I was getting better and better at tennis, I was presented with the same challenges that I was presented at lower levels. So say for example, I'm in like a lower level, I'm like tennis tournament or something, and I'm getting better, I'm playing through the rounds of that, I'm getting better, I'm winning matches and stuff. And you can play at that level. There's different levels of tournaments that you can play. So say you start at the lower level, and as I start those levels, I kind of like, okay, I don't really deserve to be here. I don't think I'm good enough to be here. And then you start winning a few matches, you start like getting better, you start getting through the rounds, and then you go up to the better level of tennis, and then the better level again. But each time I was presented with a new level and a higher level of tennis, I always was presented with the, oh, you're not good enough, like, fuck, you shouldn't be here, like, you're not good enough to be here. So I don't know where it came from, but it was just always something that I've struggled with growing up. Now I've worked on it a lot over the last 2 or 3 years, and I'm much better now. But yeah, it definitely comes from a place of low self-esteem. I can't point it to one kind of specific point. There were definitely times in my, as I was growing up as a teenager, that I can look back to now, and I was like, okay, that has really made me realize that that's something that I dealt with. So yeah, but look, I was able to use that stuff that I pinpointed to kind of direct me in a path, in a better path, and kind of the journey that I'm on now. So I'm grateful for all the things that happened to me. And I'm grateful for the fact that I really struggled with my kind of self-esteem and self-worth growing up. I really am, because now I'm so much further down the line and I've dealt with it all. Yeah, I think there's not one specific place that I can pinpoint. There are like where I kind of developed low self-esteem, because I think you're not born with low self-esteem. That's something that's learned, you know. You're not born, it's not a genetic trait. Low self-esteem isn't a genetic trait, so it's learned, or it's kind of developed as you experience life. And usually in children, that's kind of solidified by the time you're like 8 or 9. So it would be something before that would have done it. I can't pinpoint what that was, mm-hmm. but then there was definitely things in my adolescence and teenage years that I can pinpoint and be like, oh, okay, well that would point to low self-esteem and stuff. So I'm grateful that there were those things that I could pinpoint. I'm grateful where there's evidence of low self-esteem and self-worth in my childhood and my past, because now I've been able to look at it, see what it was there and work on it and get better on it. And now I'm in a much better place. So yeah, it's been a great journey. And I mean, it was tough at times, because obviously it's not nice going to a place and be like, oh fuck, well, I'm not good enough to be here, you know, or like I'm gonna lose, or like not believing in yourself or not thinking you're good enough. That's a shy thing. Yeah. There's definitely worse things, but it's not a nice feeling to have about yourself, or like an opinion to have about yourself. But I'm grateful for it, because without it, I wouldn't be here now, I don't think.
It's crazy how, like, hindsight is a great thing, but it's crazy how you, one of the first like stages in, you know, let's say your self-help or developing self-awareness or whatever, is like accepting and understanding things that have mm-hmm. happened mm-hmm. and learning from them. Because I think that was the same for me, you know, when I was getting all the injuries and when I kind of had my moment of clarification where I didn't realize, or I didn't think I was good enough. And, you know, mm-hmm. why always me? I'm getting injured this whole time. It was like, the reason I got better and the reason how kind of all this started was because I just accepted that, okay, that happened. And maybe I took responsibility and took accountability for the situation. And it's crazy how you now can sit back and say, yeah, I'm actually grateful for how shit that was, because
yeah.
I can learn from it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was the exact same. Like, I am extremely grateful for all the injuries, because it taught me about, you know, how the muscle works, but it also taught me how, you know, how you need to take care of yourself, how you need to do absolutely everything. And if you want to perform to the highest capabilities of, like, we're college athletes, but realistically college athletics in the States is so much more important than people even realize. Like, we're full-time yeah. athletes, and it's like, if you want to give your all to your sport or your game, it's like you need to be looking at every single area of your life, not just mm-hmm. your sport, of your life. And yeah. I think, you know, when we talk about, you know, being grateful for having low self-esteem, like, people might think like, what the fuck, like, what is he talking about? You know, how yeah. can you be grateful for something that was so bad in your life that realistically probably consumed your life for mm-hmm. 5-6 years maybe, you know? Yeah. I was the same, where it was like all I could think about was me and my injury and how bad my injury was and how everyone else, you know, thought I was shit because I couldn't play. And like, that is all you think about. And it was probably the mm-hmm. same with you, where all you could think about was, I don't deserve to be here. That's just, it's mm-hmm. a terrible thing. But hearing you say, like, I'm grateful for that is amazing.
Yeah. Look, I think it's interesting, because in the moment, like, I attribute my low self-esteem and low self-worth or whatever in that time to all the successes that I have now. Sorry. I think, like, which I suppose is a mad thing to say, like, how can you attribute your low self-esteem to how successful you are now? Well, I think, and I know, I think we differ on this topic a little bit, because we talked about it last week, but over those, when I started taking tennis seriously and I was like, this is what I want to do, I became completely and utterly obsessed with the sport. there was just no way on earth that I was going to, but there was no way on earth that I was going to allow myself not get to America. Like there was no, it was an ultimatum. There was just no other choice. I was going to America. But that driving force was coming from a place of, I can't bear with the fact, like, I can't bear with it if I fail. Like, I just, failure, like, I'm completely shit scared of failing, because then I'd be looking myself in the mirror being like, fuck, I completely and utterly put myself out there and tried and still failed, and therefore I'm a failure. That was my mindset when I was younger. My mindset was completely driven by fear of what questions or answers I'd have to deal with in my own head if I failed. And okay, I know objectively we can kind of talk about what is failure. I think we can talk about that a little bit, and kind of failure. Okay, if you're failing, if your focus is failure of an outcome, then I think your description of failure is wrong, because I don't think you can ever really, if you really want something badly enough, you're never going to fail. It's just going to, yeah, okay, it could take you 25 years to get there, but if you really want it that badly, you're not going to fail. And I think with, so those 2 years of me wanting to go to America between, like, I suppose between transition year and 6 year, it was completely and utterly, I was completely and utterly obsessed and did anything and everything that I could to get better every single day in order to go to America. But that was driven by my wanting to prove to myself that I could do it, and like, kind of, it was driven by low self-esteem. So I think that's part of the reason as to why I'm grateful for having had it now, is because it was my driving force. It wasn't the Jesus, I'm gonna look class when I go to America, like it'll be great on my Instagram story. Like it was I need to do this, because otherwise if I don't know what I'll be able to do if I like have to answer those questions in my head that I tried for 2 years to go to America and didn't. So it was 100% just driven by just fear, which is, yeah, I suppose it's a mad thing to say. But I think, like, and then on your other point, I think it's a good one, because we can kind of segue into kind of my journey and how I started my journey. Was I started talking to my coach or therapist or whatever when I was in four, when I kind of, again, became serious about wanting to go to America. I did it because I wanted to. I did it originally as like a sports psychology thing to try and get better at tennis and become a better tennis player. And then quickly, within 2 or 3 sessions into it, I realized, okay, well, the person that you are on a tennis court or on a soccer pitch or on an American football pitch or whatever, the person that you are on that pitch is the kind of like the rawest form of yourself. Because of the nature of sport and how stressful it is, you're kind of that, like, you can't wear a mask on a tennis court. You can't wear a mask on a football pitch. You just can't keep up this act that you might play day to day. And the majority of people in society, and I think definitely with lads in secondary school or young people our age, a lot of people wear masks. A lot of people act as if things that they're not, and like they put on these faces and they're guarded by their Canada Goose jackets or whatever. Like, they kind of can put on this persona of maybe something that they're not, right? And everyone does it. It's completely, it's natural. Like, it's natural to do that. It's not a bad thing. But I mean, obviously it speaks to some sort of insecurity within yourself that you can't express yourself for who you are. But anyway, you can't keep up that mask when you're playing sports. It's very hard to keep up that persona because of how stressful sports is. So I quickly realized that if I wanted to get better at tennis, I had to then fix and become better within myself. Because obviously that low self-esteem that was driving me to kind of succeed and do better and work really hard to get to America, it was also then hindering me when I was actually on the tennis court. So yeah, it was benefiting me when I was off the tennis court because it was making me work really hard, but it was actually hindering me when I got onto the tennis court because I didn't believe myself, because I just was like, okay, fuck, I'm not actually good enough to be here. So there's like, it's trade-offs. You get good things from it, you get bad things from it. So I had to really look at kind of my becoming self-aware. I think that was my biggest thing, and understanding that failure, and it was revolved around failure, right? It was looking failure in the eye and still having the courage to go towards that thing that I wanted to achieve, no matter the outcome, no matter of what people might think of me, no matter what might happen in the future, regardless of circumstances. And I really had to believe in that I didn't want anyone that may have previously kind of had influence over my life or the decisions that I made, because I was naturally quite low self-esteem, I would have kind of innately been someone that would have been a follower and just kind of in a pack and a bit of a sheep and kind of been influenced by kind of the leaders and stuff. I had to kind of break from that mold a little bit and just not give a fuck about what people thought of me, because that was massive for me growing up. I guilty as charged, one of the worst ones. Like, I fucking had massive worries about what people thought of me growing up. So like, I had to kind of break free of that mold and be like, look, I suppose it can get kind of cringy, because you're like, oh, look, don't let anybody decide what you want to do or whatever. Like, we see all these Instagram motivational reels or whatever. But like, at the end of the day, it's true, because I'm not going to be on my deathbed in 75 years and be like, fuck, I actually didn't go after that thing that I really wanted to achieve, because someone who goes to the local pub every Friday and Saturday night for their whole life and has not even moved out of the local area, I'm not going to let that person decide what I'm going to do with my life for fear of them judging me for doing something outside of the box. I really had, and that was really important for me, was trying to get away from that, because that's a scary, I mean, firstly, it's a scary thing to do if naturally you're kind of concerned about what other people think of you. It's a hard thing to get out of, but I think you have to realize that, like, why the fuck would I let anybody decide and make decisions for me when they don't even know me? So I think I had to go back to when I was first kind of setting up this kind of journey of my own journey, I had to create this kind of inner circle, right? And I had this inner circle of my like closest family, my closest couple of friends, and I'm not talking like loads of friends, I'm talking like two or three friends, my closest friends, my family, and my closest coaches and stuff, and people that I really, really believed in, and people that really believed in me. So I kind of had that inner circle. And these are the people that actually fully know me, right? These are the people that know Kieran almost as Kieran knows himself. Like, they know me through and through. They know every part about me, right? Like it's the closest people in your life. Outside of that core group of people is everyone else. And if you're outside that core group of people, respectfully, I don't give a fuck about what you think of me. Right? And that's not coming from an arrogant place. That is coming from a place of, you just don't know me fully. You don't know my whole story. You don't know who I am as a person fully. So therefore you're not going to be allowed to have influence over what I do, and I'm not going to care what you then think of what I do. Because most of the time, these people are too caught up and this is something that you have to get to as well. Most of the time you need to get to the point where you understand that most people are caught up on their own shit and just as equally insecure or caught up on their own stuff that they're dealing with to even give a fuck about you. And whenever someone like casts judgment or says something about you, majority of the time they're just projecting their own insecurities on you, because they can't deal with facing their own thing themselves, because that's too scary. So they're easily able to project it over someone else. So all of these realizations I had to come to myself, just to let go of that fear of like people having influence about what I did and what I thought, you know? Because I think naturally, like you said it last week in last week's podcast, like to walk into secondary school or wherever you are and say, yeah, I'm going to try and go to America for college, like, and trying to get outside, like do something outside the box. A lot of the time within Ireland, that's a really hard thing to do, because Irish people are quite stuck in their own ways and their own views, and anything outside the box is seen as like, oh well, why the fuck would you do that? Like, why would you try and, who do you think you are trying to do that, you know? And I had to try and, again, that was just the next level then of just breaking free of that mold and breaking free of that kind of attachment to what people thought of what I was doing. Because at the end of the day, why the fuck would I care what anyone thinks of me or anyone thinks of the decisions that I'm making or the goals that I'm going towards? Like, I want you, like, you do, go do whatever you want to do. If that's chase your own dreams or go for these wild aspirational goals or just go to the local pub every Friday and Saturday for the rest of your life, I don't mind. You do whatever you want to do, but I'm not going to let you have influence over my decisions. So that was kind of, I suppose that was the first 6 to 8 months of that kind of own journey with the coach that I had was trying to release that attachment to the thoughts of others. And after that, it was really, really freeing and allowed me to just go after the goals that I wanted to go for with no worry of consequences.
Yeah, it's a cool story because, you know, when I think of tennis, and like my mom would like tennis, and I would have watched, say, Wimbledon growing up in the summer, and I think I'd done about 3 lessons and I said,
did you, yeah?
This is not for me. Yeah.
Where did you do them?
Yeah. Do you know, like End Zone or something? You know,
fuck it's off, like no way.
Concealing. Yeah.
I know the coaches. The coaches are they're like a band of brothers.
They're my mom's cousins, I think.
No way.
So yeah.
Fuck off. So, come on. I used to train with the oldest brother and the youngest brother as well, actually a little bit. But I used to train a bit with the oldest brother. He used to run the Leinster squads and stuff. So yeah, I know that family well, yeah.
Yeah, I was there for a little bit. But for me, like growing up, like I said, when I think of tennis, I think like Nadal or like Rafa or Roger. And it's like, it's an individual sport. And like for me, I never played an individual sport growing up.
Okay.
It was all team sports because I really feel there is a big difference in the two.
Oh, fuck, you know, that. Jesus
for
Christ,
me,
it's so different.
For me, you know, obviously there's individual aspects of team sports. So if I make a bad pass or if I lose the ball and the team score and then we lose, like, of course, you're going to take ownership for that. But there are so many other aspects of a team sport that can contribute to a loss or a win. You know, so let's say we played yesterday, we won like 4-0 and then we played another game and it was 0-0. And it was like, if I look back, you know, I played probably 40 minutes and it's like, yeah, I made a good few passes. There was a few nutmegs in there. There was times where I won the ball back there. I nearly got an assist but I also missed a free kick or I also say lost the ball or missed the tackle. But they all didn't contribute to me winning or losing because we still drew.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you miss a forehand or you slice it and it hits the net. That's full. You have to take full ownership of that.
Mm-hmm.
What was your like? How did you react to that initially? Like in terms of, like, you know, we talked about your self esteem. So you know, you hit the net or you double fault on a serve, and it's like you can't blame anyone else. You can't blame your coach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what was your like in the very beginning? What was your thoughts on that? And then how was that kind of changed over the last, let's say, a couple of years?
That's a great question. That's actually one I didn't even think about myself. So fair play to you. That's a good one because I like talking about this. I think firstly we have to look at like this. That was one of the main reasons as to why I chose tennis when I left the GAA and the hurling and team sports. And it's been an interesting shift over the last few years, and I'll go into that now. But it's one of the reasons why I left. One of the kind of more important reasons as to why I actually decided to leave team sports was because I'm the type of person that if I have a goal or I'm doing something, I'm always going to try with 100% effort. And I don't care if someone calls me a try hardy. Okay, fuck off. I don't care. Like I'm putting my 100% effort into everything that I do because that's just the way I was raised. And that's just the way I like doing things. Why would you not put your 100% effort into anything? And that there was, sometimes when I was playing team sports growing up, there were people on certain teams that didn't have that same mentality. And that used to piss me off so much because I'm like, how can you be on a team and you're rocking up to a match on a Saturday and you've gone out on the Friday night and you're drinking a lot of beers on a session on the beach or something? Like, well, you have clearly no fucking respect for me. Like, why are you doing that? Now,
yeah.
Again, I was a little pussy when I was 16 years old, so it wasn't like I was going up to lads saying that who came into the change room hungover it, and I was just thinking it in my mind. But like I always found it disrespectful to for people to just not put in their 100% effort when you're on a team, because that, like, you're on a team, fucking put your effort in for lads that are beside you should care about that band of brothers that are beside you. So that's kind of one of the reasons that I left team sports. And then, so that's what I loved about individual sports was the accountability factor. There's no escaping. There's no escaping a loss or a mistake or anything when you're on a tennis court. And now people absolutely try and do that because you can use any excuse under the sun being like, oh, I didn't have the right rackets. The weather was really bad. I was playing inside instead of outside. The courts were kind of slow or high bouncing or the other player was cheating or whatever. For me as a person, I have always been, and I was just raised that way, I will never ever make an excuse for anything. That's just the way I am. I will never make an excuse for losing or for a negative outcome. I won't blame it on anything. Even if there's maybe a just case for it, I won't do it. Because then that speaks of like you're not taking full accountability for the things that were in your control. There's only so many things that are in your control in a tennis match. And that's why I no longer mind taking accountability for the thing. Like, yeah, okay, it's frustrating. But there's only a handful of things that are in your control when you're playing a tennis match. And I will always take accountability for that. Like I can't control how someone hits the ball to me. I can't control the power at which someone hits. I can't control the calls that they make. I can't control the weather. I can't control whether it's inside or outside. I can't control any of those things. So why would I blame them then for being like the reason as to why I lost? No, the reason as to why I lost will be the things that I can control, whether that's energy, attitude, footwork, my serve. The serve is the only shot in tennis where you have control over. You don't have control over a single other shot because of the variables that go into how the other person plays, you know? So
yeah,
I've always been the person that takes full accountability for everything, and that's just the way I am. And I no longer see that. I used to, but I no longer take it as a reflection of myself or my own ability or my own talent. When I lose a match, I don't take it as a reflection of myself, because that's just a negative spiral that I know, because naturally I'm a bit of an overthinker. I will allow that to spiral if I think about it too much. So I just park it when I have that thought come in and kind of those excuses. I'm just like, no, okay, I'm not doing any of that because that's not going to benefit me in any way. But I think it's just better to take accountability for all those things. And yeah, I do miss it now though. It's interesting because it is one of the main reasons as to why I left team sports. But now I look at hurling teams and like in particular the Navan Oak team, that my local team, that the senior hurlers now that are doing quite well. They're the last 2 or 3 years they've been on quite a good come up, and I've kind of followed all their fixtures and stuff, and they've been doing really well. And there's nothing like the feeling of winning a match with 14 people beside you, literally like on the same pitch as you, rather than me winning a tennis match. There's no comparison. If it's a good team, I will always choose a team sport over a individual sport every single day, because there's nothing like that, like a final whistle going and you're running, celebrating with your mates, and you all put in that effort to like go and support each other. Whereas like, yeah, okay, tennis is great. Yeah. Okay. I get a little bit more credit because okay, I did all that stuff to win. Or whatever. I don't give a fuck about that though. Like I would much rather share, and this is just, I suppose it's just the person that I am. I would just much rather share a victory with a group of people than just sell, like have all the credit for myself and be like, yeah, look what I did. I couldn't give a fuck about that. But and that's the memories. All my best sporting memories growing up and all my like my best achievements have come in a team environment. It's not any individual thing that I've done with tennis or anything. Like
yeah.
And that's what I love about the college athletics over here in America with tennis is it is more of a team sport than it is back home in Ireland. Okay, obviously you're playing singles matches and doubles matches, but like there's six singles matches beside each other where you're, okay, so you're competing by yourself, but you are competing with your teammates and stuff. You're all playing for each other.
Yeah.
So that's as close as I can get it to team sports. But I do definitely miss the hurling and good chance I make a return in the future to it.
Yeah. Sometime, yeah, it's crazy. Like, I love, you know, when I was struggling, like, let's say when I came over here first and I had all the injuries back to back, there was a period there where I wasn't taking responsibility and taking accountability for the injuries or for like why I wasn't playing. And when I actually decided to take accountability and take responsibility, that's when everything changed.
Yeah.
You know, that's when I started Tussig. That's when I again, you had the same opinion of like, fuck what everyone else thinks. Like, who cares? You know, at the same time, like, you know, I hear all the stories of like, you know, when you're 70, 80 lying on your deathbed, like, you're going to regret not taking that chance or whatever it was. And then it was funny, you mentioned like team sports, and because when I was at my lowest, let's say, I didn't really want to be a part of a team because it was the first time when I felt like I wasn't good enough for the team, you know, because my way up, like, let's say playing soccer, like with Pomanic, obviously it never changed with Sales. Like, I was decent with Sales the whole way up. And obviously playing on the development squad was the only real test, I feel like, with Sales. Where with soccer, it was like Pomanic, then NDSL, it was a test and I passed. And then I went to Belvedere, it was a test and I passed, and then Drogheda. And then when I came here, the one thing that I hated was that I couldn't, everyone else thought I wasn't good because I wasn't able to show them what I could do because of the injuries that were actually my fault. You know what I mean? So it was like, everyone else thinks I'm shit. Everyone else thinks I'm not good enough. Why? Because I'm injured. But why are you injured? Because I didn't take care and I didn't look after myself. So even though it's a team sport, and even though football and hurling and whatever is so important and so reliant on team sports, if you can't take accountability and responsibility for your own actions within that team, first of all, you're not going to succeed. And then, like you said, the team isn't going to succeed. Because if you have slackers, and if you have people who aren't giving it their all, which I'm sure we've been on teams where there are plenty of those, and I think maybe the higher up you get, the less of it there is. But there still is, you know, there still is the drinking, there still is the partying 2 days before a game. And it's like, you're not in control of that. And I think when you get to a stage where you just completely look after yourself and you focus on your own daily actions, your own actions within the game, let's say for you, your own serve, your own slice, your own forehand, like breaking down all the actions that you actually can control, it's massive and everything changes. So it's cool how you have that opinion of team sports and individual sports, because I don't know, like when I finish, like I have one more season left, it's like I kind of want to try the individual sports, because I agree with you in the sense that I maybe running or like ultra marathons or things like that, because the way my mind works now is a lot different, where it's like beforehand, maybe I wasn't in control of my mind so that I could never push myself past a certain limit. Where in the last year or so, I've kind of like changed a little in the sense that I can now kind of push like just a little further and a little further. And when you push that little further, you realize that there's another
limit. That's where the good stuff is. So
you have to push the next limit and the next limit. And I feel like with team sports, it's hard to do that because you have other people that you have to bring along with you. Whereas with an individual sport, let's say with running, it's like that I have another 10 kilometers here that I have to run and my coach isn't going to help me, or my fucking fueling or my stretching beforehand isn't going to help me. It's my mind that is going to push me this last 10 kilometers. But with a team sport, it's kind of like, if I make this sprint here and I pass you the ball and you're true on goal, but you miss, like no one wins, you know? It's interesting. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm really 50-50 with the whole concept of individual and team sport.
That's a good point that you made about, like, I think one thing that if anyone's going to start this start a journey of their own, I think you really need to understand that for me, it was, I started this journey because I wanted to be a better tennis player. Then I quickly realized that I had to shift those improvements to my own life for then that to show in tennis. And I think that was a valuable lesson in that, like, the skills that you take away from, for me, tennis, but I think sports in general, are you need to understand that you can apply them on a day-to-day basis within your own life. Like, there's so many lessons that I've taken away from tennis that I just implement on a day-to-day basis now. Like, control what you can control. Control the controllables. It's a cliche saying that's completely and utterly overused, but it's so true. Like, why? And this is and this is why I'm kind of in the place that I am now, in that I'm quite secure within myself, secure about my own self-worth, and I am seeing it, and I'm so much more happy. Like, I'm so much more happy than I was like 2 or 3 years ago, because I'm now at the, like, on the, over the hump of this, over the start of this journey, I've understood more. I think when you can start implementing those things into your own life, you become such a much more happier person. And I think that's so important. And look, sports will only take us so far. And for me, I know I'm definitely, there was never a professional career in the making. That's not for me. That's not what I'm capable of. And that's okay. But I've taken so many valuable lessons from tennis that it's set me up for life that I'm so grateful for now. So control the controllables. Why would I get stressed over things that I have no control about? Just in life in general, we can pick any topic. But there's only a certain amount of things within my life that I can control. And they're usually just the things that are just in front of you. I can't control what a professor is going to assign me homework, or what a family member is going to say to me, or what a person on the street says to me, or anything. Like, I can't control anything that anyone else does. I can only control the things that are within my control. So why get stressed about things that are outside of that? You know? Why get stressed about things that you have no control over? I think that's really valuable.
I have this poster on my wall, and it's from Marcus Aurelius. Have you read any stoicism or any of that?
A little bit. I've your man. What's his name? The guy that wrote the Daily Stoic, Ryan Holiday.
Oh yeah,
is his name.
Yeah.
I've read that book, but I haven't read. I haven't done my own. I've just read that book, but I haven't read my own kind of philosophy.
Meditations by Marcus Aurelius is a good one, because it actually, like, it's a bit mad how, like, he was one of the leaders of one of the greatest like colonies, and in probably not colonies the right word, but like the greatest empires in mm-hmm. in history. And hearing, you know, realistically, he was probably at the pinnacle of all life. Like, he could take over countries, he could, you know, run his own empire. And it was like, it's a great insight into his mindset and how it worked. And I think if you can develop a mindset of someone who rules an empire, I think you're probably going to be a beast. But he talks about like controlling, like, you don't have control over external events, but you have control over your mind and how you interpret those outside events. So yeah, let's say the bird shits on you. It's like, oh, but it's good luck. When a bird, or you could say, I just got shot on. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, it's controlling, it's, you're right in controlling the controllables, but also controlling the one thing that impacts everything, which is your mind. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, that's how probably I live my life now. Like, is there one lesson that you took, or maybe there's a few lessons that you took from, let's say, starting your journey to, you know, speaking with your coach and developing the skills and the traits necessary to be a better tennis player. But also then, if we can move into, let's say, moving away from home, because, you know, we talked about how much tennis impacted your life, but like, we live 5,000 kilometers away. So is there one thing or two things that you learned throughout maybe the whole process that kind of changed your life for the better?
Yeah, good question. I think, and again, funnily enough, we'll find that's quite similar with a lot of things that I've learned in life. It came from tennis. In tennis, you want to kind of stay in the present moment as much as possible. And this is where meditation comes in, and kind of cues that you can kind of, mental cues that you can get back into the present. And because thinking about the, like, if you're thinking about the past, this is just psychology 101. If you think about the past, it brings about like depressive thoughts and like depression in the sense that like, oh fuck, this is gonna happen again, fuck, this bad result is gonna happen again or whatever. You start worrying about, like, you start getting caught up on the past events. So that's fucked. Get away from thinking of the past or like your past results in tennis, right? Think about the future. All right, let's look at the future. If I'm in a tennis match and I'm like, fuck, what's going to happen? If I'm thinking about the outcome, I'm like, fuck, I'm going to lose, I'm going to win, or all this sort of stuff. I'm not actually focusing on what I'm doing in that moment. So it's going to take me away from being able to get to where I want to go. So past thoughts bring about like depressive episodes or depressive thoughts. Looking too far into the future brings out complete and utter anxiety because you're like, fuck, you're worried about the outcome, worried about the future. So the golden place to be is the present, right?
Yeah.
And only when you're in the present are you able to focus on the process. So it's process over outcome. Another fucking cliche saying that we always hear. But it's true. Process over outcome. Stop worrying about things 10 yards down the road. Don't worry about that. Like that's not in your control. But what is in your control is things that you can work on right now. So focus on the things that are in your control, the process, few things like that, and then the outcome will look after itself. So that's in a tennis perspective, but it also is true in terms of the day-to-day life. You know, like if you can, there's so many benefits of just being in each and every moment when you're there every day. And I know that sounds cringy as fuck, so call me off if you like for that, but like honestly,
no, that's why we're doing this, man, to be cringe.
No, 100%. but this is the thing, Dara, is I actually don't give a fuck if someone calls me off for saying something like that. I don't care, because this is actually how I'm living. So like, I don't care if someone says anything about that, but like if you're in each and every moment as much as possible, and you're not worrying about an exam that you have coming up, or your driver's test that's in 3 weeks, or you're not worried about what's going to happen for the summer or whatever. If you're in each and every moment, that's where you take the good stuff out of life. You only take the good stuff out of life when you're actually present there and able to take it in. You know, you can, you're fucked if you have any other opinions, because you can't enjoy the stuff that's there in front of you if your mind is somewhere else. So as much as possible, if you can stay present every day and keep yourself kind of grounded, that's where you'll start like appreciating the good stuff. That's where you'll start being able to be grateful and start being able to take out the good stuff in the day to day. Because I think it's very easy for us to just get caught in a kind of a vicious cycle of just like waiting for the next, living for the next thing, living for the weekend, living for the next session, living for a festival, living for a holiday, all this sort of stuff. But you're gonna waste your life away if you do that for 25 years, you know? That's you take away the little stuff from the day to day, and you can only do that by being present in each and every moment. So yeah, I think that was one thing that I had to do when I moved away from home, was because when I and not many people know this, but when I first moved away, I fucking cried myself to sleep for the first 6 weeks. I was so homesick. You don't even understand. I was on FaceTime to my mom, whatever, a couple times a week for the first few weeks. And I wouldn't be able to have my face on the camera because I'd be fucking welling up being like, fuck, I'm missing home so much. But man, I struggled. It was terrible. It was so bad. But then I suppose I had to, so those first like 6 weeks, I was wishing away. I was like, get me home for Christmas. This is fucking shite. This is, the longest I'd been away from home was I went on a trip in transition year to South Africa. I went there for two weeks. Yeah. I was there for 2 weeks, and that was the longest I'd ever been away from home. And I don't even know if you'd really count that as being away, because I was with people from my year. I was with teachers. I was with everyone that I knew. But and it was during COVID as well when I went to America. So I'm fucking up the escalator terminal 2 with 2 suitcases, and my family can't even come with me because it's COVID, so they're not allowed in the country. So I'm a little 19-year-old going through security, fucking hasn't even a breeze of what life is about, and then has to figure out how to get to America by himself and then just live. Now look, I'm definitely not the end of the scale, because I'm very lucky in that English was my first language, firstly. So when I got to America, I didn't have to struggle with learning the language. I know many people and many people that I went to college with that just didn't even say a word for the first semester because English wasn't their first language. So I can't imagine how tough that would be.
Yeah.
And then also, I was so lucky in the sense that I was an athlete. So I was put into a group of 12 other guys straight away. I didn't have to force myself to get outside my comfort zone to make friends and try and like create a group of people around me. I was lucky enough to be placed into a group of 12 other guys. So that was really, really nice that I didn't have to deal with that. Now, obviously I still pushed myself when I got more comfortable to meet people outside the tennis team. And some of my closest friends now aren't tennis players. But that initial kind of 6 weeks, yeah, fuck, Jesus Christ, I just was, I was a shit show. It really was a shit show. My academics were fucked because they kind of messed up my transcripts and stuff. So I ended up taking a lot of classes that I had a notion about. It was really, really hard. That first 6 weeks, really fucking hard. But after I finally kind of got into my rhythm and my routine and got familiar with where I was and made more friends and stuff, I mean, from there on, it's been the quickest nearly 3 years of my life, and it's been amazing. It's been really, really hard. It's been really fucking tough. But I mean, tough doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad thing. It's been the greatest experience that I've had so far. So yeah.
I think like I wrote about this in like the newsletter there last week. It was like nothing worth achieving is easy.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like people that are like, you know, they get rich quick or they win the lotto or they win something and they didn't put any of the work in. That feeling is nothing compared to someone who has endured every sort of setback or
mm-hmm.
or mental blockage and then they succeeded. You know, that feeling is greater than any other feeling that probably you'll ever experience. Is grinding out and like you said, working on the process every single day to achieve this thing that maybe other people didn't think were possible, or maybe you didn't think were possible, but you still continue to do it. Like mm-hmm. regardless of, you know, the situation or the outcome, you still mm-hmm. continue to grow. You still continue to put in action. And I think that's a massive kind of point of this podcast and the podcast in general is like, we don't know what the outcome of this podcast is going to be, mm-hmm. but we're doing it every day. We're learning more every day, and we're the maybe the little setbacks on the audio or the video and all these things are just going to add up, and it's something that we're okay with dealing with. Mm-hmm. And I think again, you know, going back to the quote that I just said, like controlling your mind is the most important thing throughout your sport, throughout your job, throughout your whole life. Because mm-hmm. If you cannot understand that these setbacks are going to happen, like you said, maybe people thought like, oh, Kieran's going out to America, Dara's going to America, they're going to have a great time, they're going to enjoy every single minute. Mm-hmm. Fuck me, like there's plenty of times where I've been like, I don't want to be here. Do you know, I don't really want to be this far away. You know, the lads are going to a party, or the lads are going to a football match, or they're going away. And it's like, I'm sitting here in a dorm room and mm-hmm. my heating doesn't work. It's like, but again, it's that process of like, well, I've learned so much from moving away. I've learned how to cook for myself, learned how to feed myself. I've learned how to, you know, like wash my own clothes. Like these are things mm-hmm. that probably people at home still can't do because they live at home.
Yeah.
And it's like, again, it's being able to say like, well, there was times where it was shit. Like you said, mm-hmm. the first 6 months were terrible. There were plenty of times. My first 2 years were rough because of I didn't play because I wasn't necessarily on my own because I had another Irish guy that I was with and the team was pretty cool. But like internally, I felt so alone because mm-hmm. of I couldn't do the thing that I was brought here to do. And you know, I would be the same when I would call my parents back home and they would know that I wasn't myself. And
yeah,
it's interesting how, you know, it definitely in the last year or so, like the phone calls have changed where they can kind of start to see me, you know, come out of my shell a little more because of I've come out of that, or I've come over that hump or that bump in the road and mm-hmm. in the journey. So like, it's cool to hear your story and it's cool to kind of relate to you because, you know, there's probably not a lot of people who can relate to, let's say, our story.
That'll
listen to this because they haven't experienced that. And that's probably one thing that I would encourage everyone to do is to kind of get out of their comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
And if that means leaving Ireland or if that means, you know, going somewhere else. And like, I'm not just saying leave Ireland because you can leave all your problems at home because they come with you. But the thing is, like, putting yourself in uncomfortable situations is the only time that you're going to grow.
Yep.
You're not going to grow by sitting in your comfort zone or by you're not going to grow really by playing tennis in your local club until you're 35. You're going to meet the same people. You're going to play against the same people in the tournaments. You're also going to probably end up in the pub afterwards. And it's like, again, it's that vicious cycle where we've now put ourselves in this extremely uncomfortable position where we've met people from all over the world. We've moved away from home. We're living on our own. And bringing it back full circle, like, I'm extremely grateful for the things that have happened to me, the downs and the ups over the past 2 years, but over the past 22 years also. And, you know, as we finish up, like, maybe elaborate on how, I don't want to say how grateful you are, but how much the ups and the downs have, like, impacted your life and how you're going to take that into the next year and a half when we finish college, but then the next 5, 10, 15 years as we leave college and enter the real world.
Yeah, I think firstly, I completely and utterly agree in that the good stuff in life, the stuff worth having only ever comes when we're outside our comfort zone. And we're only, like, that's the only time in which we'll ever really grow and get the good stuff. Now, that doesn't mean you don't have to go to America or you don't have to live 5,000 kilometers away. You don't have to. If it's something as easy as going for a sea swim every day before 9 o'clock or not going on your phone for the first hour you get up.
Going sober for a few months.
Yeah, exactly. Do something that you're not naturally inclined to do and you will see benefits so, so quickly. Like, there's doing, like, you only ever, like, we're not gonna sit around the fire when we're 85 years old and talk about the stuff that really came easy to us and the successes that we had because things were really easy, you know? There's no good stuff without struggle. And again, I'm not saying that doesn't have to mean that we have to design a rocket and get to Mars and really struggle for 10 years to do that. You don't have to do all that. Them. Yeah, of course. But, like, you just do stuff that's, like, a little bit uncomfortable at the start especially, because I think it could be potentially easy for people to get lost in this and be like, fuck, well, to get out of my comfort zone, I have to go to America and learn all these lessons. No, you don't have to do that. Start with the little things. Start with the little things that you think you can do, little esteemable acts that you can do to work on yourself and that are actually uncomfortable to you, that challenge you. And that's where you'll start taking lessons from. And that's where you'll start being like, fuck, I can actually do all this stuff. Yeah, it's hard, but I can actually do this stuff, you know? And that's the biggest lesson that I've taken away in the last 2 years is that, and this isn't not coming in any sort of cocky way, but I now at least put myself on the same pedestal as everyone else that I used to put up on pedestals. I now align myself with other, I'm no better than any other person on this planet. I'm not better than any single person. But I'm no less than any other person, you know? And that's what I used to do. I'm no less than anybody anymore. Everyone deserves to be given and treated with the same respect as I give myself, you know? And vice versa. And I feel as if I deserve that respect from other people, you know? And so that's kind of those two things, like aligning myself with everyone else now and then continuing to challenge myself over the next few years, doing things that are really hard for me. Fucking example, a podcast, what the fuck am I even doing here, like but doing things that are really hard, because Why wouldn't I do things that are hard? Like, why wouldn't I do this sort of stuff? You know, in 8 weeks, we could turn back and be like, Jesus, we did 4 podcasts and they absolutely failed horrifically and we never did that again, right? We potentially that could happen. But like, the stuff that I will have learned from this process is the good stuff, you know? It's the hard stuff. And that's the stuff that really motivates me to go forward, is doing hard things. Whatever that looks like. I don't know what that looks like, but continuing to challenge myself over the next few years is really important for me. And that's where I get my gratitude from on a day-to-day basis now. I'm grateful for the failures that I've gone through. I'm grateful for the lessons that have come from those failures. And most of the time, they haven't ended up as failures because I've been able to right the wrongs in time, and things that I saw as failures in one moment was actually just leading me up to succeed at something even bigger than I thought I was capable of succeeding prior to that initial failure. You know, you have to be able to close doors behind you before you can walk into the ones that are open in front of you. And yeah, I think I'm grateful for the struggle now. And I think that's just been a mindset shift over the last few years. But yeah, taking gratitude from the struggle and knowing that in time it'll come full circle, and hopefully it'll bring like some fruits of your labor, you know.
Yeah, love that. It's crazy. I mean, like, again, we talked about this. The whole reason we're starting this is to just learn, and the only way we're gonna do that is by starting Tussig. But at the same time, like, just getting going and fucking, regardless of what other people think of us or think of the podcast, or regardless the outcome, is that we've already succeeded. Regardless of, we haven't even posted the first these episodes, we've already succeeded because the goal was to do a podcast, and we've done that. And I think that's definitely something that I'm taking from this experience, and taking from your story and the lessons you've learned, because like, you wanted to become a better tennis player, so you just started to implement the actions that your coach gave you, and look where you are now, you know. I love that. Like I said, I was excited for this chat, and I think I've learned more about you and about the journey. And I think if someone has actually got to the end of this episode, they would have learned a lot as well. So thank you for sharing all that. Do you have any final words, anything else you want to add?
No, I think that's it. I don't know how long we've been rolling now for, but I think there's a good chance we've lost all our listeners. But I think now that we've presented your story and my story, it's hopefully given a bit of context to the following conversations that we're about to have, and whether that's just yourself, myself, or we bring on guests. I hope if people have listened to any or all of these episodes, they'll be able to kind of get a better understanding of maybe where we're coming from. And I think that comes from our own experiences. So yeah, hopefully it's added a bit of value. And now we get to roll on and start filming some more interesting episodes.
Yeah, now we get to get into the good stuff.
Looking
forward to them. The good stuff, yeah. But yeah, like I said, we're going to post these now, finally, and we're going to start up on the social media. If there are episodes that people, or things that people want us to talk about, then DM the Instagram, or if you want to talk to us individually, personally, I'm open to chatting to people about concepts and thoughts. That's the whole reason we're starting this podcast. So I might put up a little Instagram story on the Instagram page to get people's feedback or get people's opinions or thoughts on future episodes. But other than that, we do have a list of things that we want to talk about. So the plan is over the next few weeks to get stuck into them. Like I said, anything else you want to add? No, all good.
No, perfect. Episode 3 done. We're flying through these now.
Boom. Yeah, flying through them. But yeah, we'll leave it there. Hour 15, by the way.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, sorry. I apologize. I've absolutely
waffler. Absolute waffler. Hour 15. Thank you. If you are still here, thank you for listening. New episode. We're trying to get one out every week, so hopefully you'll be enjoying these by now, and there'll be a few more in the pipeline. So yeah, thanks for listening, everyone, and I guess we'll see you next time.